Hello and welcome to Gotta Say It, podcast number 48,695 and a half, I think, or 12, 14, something like that. I'm Marvin Williams, joined as always, because I am so lucky to have the one guy that Justin Bieber goes to for home shopping advice, Mr. Matthew Aloysius Octavius Orenthal Gerard Ryan. The third, the half, a fourth, and a 15th. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, and from now on, call me Mizzle. Don't do that. Yeah, Bieber's moving to your neck of the woods there,
yeah,
pal.
Yeah, man. You know, and there was a great thing this radio crew did, this whole fake protest thing, and everybody bit on it like it was amazing. The mainstream media in Atlanta jumped on it, talking about the broadcast, and the guys who did it actually said at some point they realized they had to tell them we're punking everybody when they looked up and really saw the real media people there, you know, going nuts about this protest over Justin Bieber moving to Atlanta. And it just shows you what happens when you don't look up from the college football schedule, what happens in a town, because I would text Matthew all the time. With, you know, the Braves are in the middle of a playoff run, you know, all this stuff is going on. I turn on sports radio in Atlanta, and what they're talking about is who's going to be the third linebacker for the University of Georgia starting defense the next year.
There's a weird priority once you go past, like, Baltimore in sports. And you know what? If you like college sports more than pro sport, that's fine. But there needs to be some sort of weird proliferation, because in New York City, we have St. John's, we have like neighboring places, but college sports really doesn't matter. Well, once you go a little farther south.
it's that or everything. Oh, I remember what it was. It was the day that it was announced that Glavin and Maddox were going into the Hall of Fame along with Bobby Cox. And having lived in that area when they were on their 14-year run of National League East pennants and, you know, the World Series appearances and the whole nine, and just hearing literally every day, future Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer. Well, it finally became a real item. It was this, oh, yeah, okay, they're going to the Hall of Fame. But, man, this guy that Georgia just recruited from so-and-so high school in the middle of whatever is amazing. He's 6'4", 235 pounds.
It does seem like they don't handle legacy well in Georgia.
Well, think about what their legacy really is. You know, they had to resettle the argument for the Georgia flag because it still had the Confederate flag in it. It's the home of the Sons of the Confederate Nation still, who have actually a nicer building than Allstate Insurance when you go down to want to join. And anybody can join, by the way. It's
just, are you a member of the Confederate Sons?
No, because, you know, you have to show a birth certificate and prove that you were born in the United States of Georgia.
Oh. And you were born in the Consolidated States of Mississippi.
That's right. No, the Great Island Nation of Mississippi, baby. That's how we do it. The octopus was born.
This is the weirdest archipelago, I think, in the world.
By the way, for those of you who are taking the time to listen to this podcast, we're actually recording in parts unknown. I'm in a bunker somewhere north of Sochi, and I think Matthew is on the Space Shuttle Challenger right now, orbiting. Somebody's going to believe that. I should say that, right?
I'm on the moon, you guys.
So I'm waving at you. It takes about 3 seconds, but you'll see me. Speaking of the moon, let's talk about what's happening in the NFL right now.
Oh, boy.
Here we go. Let's get the combine stuff out the way. Because if God tells you to leave the combine, obviously you should go or leave or whatever. Adam Muima, I hope I'm saying that right. I hope the more I hear about this story, the weirder it gets. And for those of you who are not sure, Adam Muima was at the combine and was making a decent showing. And all of a sudden he ups and leaves. And he says he left because God told him to leave the combine, that He had the NFL in his future and whatever else is going on, and he didn't have to be there anymore. So he just up and just turned his back on everyone, and he left. So, you know, here's a kid from San Diego State, not exactly known as a, you know, mega football power, but had he was getting enough attention, you know, as a running back, I believe, that you know, people were saying, okay, you know, this kid might have something here. And the more he talks, the weirder it's getting, like this new messiah he's found, El Rey. And the more I read about this, I started wondering, has this happened more than we know about, but not because of the instant language of media with Twitter and everything else that we're just hearing about it? Whereas if this would have happened maybe, I don't know, let's say 10 years ago, it might not have been that big a deal. You know, especially if you're talking about somebody from San Diego State. I mean, it's not exactly going to imbue, oh, wow, football powerhouse here. You know, so I'm really torn because I am finally coming to like and dig the how Twitter works. And we are going to be back on Twitter here soon. I'm finally starting to get the process of how social media works to get news out there instantly to help people. And I'm seeing, and I'm the more I read about this situation with this kid, I just have to say, is he just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs or what is going on?
I think he's a kid that got talked into something and was really just, I don't want to say brainwashed, but fell into the cult of personality of this guy. There's a whole bunch of articles on Deadspin.com. Yeah, Adam Muima, he went to a mass, mm-hmm. and he believes in something called angel numbers. It seems like this variation right. on numerology.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is.
And he was convinced that God was sending him a message, and he changed his profile on Twitter to read Seahawks number 8, and he has bought a bunch of Seahawks merchandise to adorn his home. Now, I'm a believer in the power of positive thinking.
Yes, I'm same. And you know what? If whatever your faith is, look, no judgment here. But there's a little bit about this that, and I'm laughing because the fact that he is with it's about the Seahawks, it's also about Pete Carroll, Captain Weird number 2, makes it even more bizarre. What do you think Richard Sherman is saying right now, right? Can you imagine what The Economist is saying right now?
I like Richard Sherman. I'm going to come out and say it. I said it on my football podcast, The 22 Weeks of Hate. Mm-hmm. I liked Richard Sherman. I had no problem with anything he said. I kind of had a bigger problem with Michael Crabtree for being kind of a douche.
Yeah. And you know what? And the more that has come out down here as well in terms of the things that Michael Crabtree said to him and what he did at Richard Sherman's charity also sort of lends itself toward Richard was going to respond one way or the other. So you're absolutely right. And I'm with you. I don't see anything other than a very passionate young man who has this platform to speak his mind, but he's also the kind of cat that he could sit at the table with George Will, and you know you've seen him sit at the I don't know if our listeners have seen him sit at the table. You should YouTube this Richard Sherman versus the gentleman from Second Take that
Skip no one Bayless.
Like Skip Bayless, yeah, who you know very few people can sit toe to toe with the random emotionalism of Skip Bayless and actually make the conversation sound coherent, and Richard Sherman's able to do that. So he is no dummy, indeed, and when he says something, he knows exactly what he's saying. So you can bet there's a reason for it. But I would love to know when all this came out. Richard Sherman waking up somewhere on vacation, looking up and seeing this guy and his god Ray L or El Ray or whoever, and wants to come to the Seahawks. Can you imagine what the Aaron Andrews interview would sound like then?
Don't come at me with that false prophecy. Something along those lines.
No, it'd be awesome. Well, you know what, Adam, good luck for you. You and your newfound messiah, Ra'el. And, you know, I can't wait to see you and Tim Tebow on Dancing with the Stars. Speaking of Tim Tebow, Michael Vick is has been released from Philadelphia, or they're not going to re-sign him, not release.
Yeah.
You know, just not going to re-sign him. And the word on the street is he might end up a Jet. Now,
elucidate on this, because I've not heard this.
Yeah, the word was that there were not official conversations, because he has not officially been he has officially not been unresigned yet, or not resigned yet, or whatever the term is. But the word is that there is a strong interest from the ownership and the management of the Jets to bring in Michael Vick. Now, Michael Vick wants to be a starter. And to my knowledge right now, the starter happens to be a young man by the name of Geno Smith. Now, people try to make comparisons between Geno Smith and Mike Vick, and you can't do it. It's not the same. And if you don't believe me, go back and take a look at the stuff that Michael Vick did in the league in his day before he started taking video study and practice serious. So it's one of those, it's sort of like the Ken Griffey Jr. story. Like, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. did all these amazing things, and he never even practiced or worked out or did anything. And unfortunately, as he got older, you know, that caught up with him. Now, Mike Vick had another situation that sort of removed him from the league for 2 years. But when he came back, he was not only a smarter quarterback, a lot of people said he was a better quarterback. And, you know, but just, you know, right now, right now in Philadelphia, he's not working anymore. And they want to move on. And, you know, he had his chance. And I think Mike kind of wants to move on as well. And Matthew, you know this. I'm not sure if our listeners do, but I was probably one of the biggest anti-Vic people. And this is pre-dogfighting scandal. This is pre-prison. This is pre-everything. I was probably one of the biggest non-Vic fans there were on the planet. And I was in Atlanta when he got there, and all the mashugana that was around number seven and everything that's going on. And even after meeting him a couple of times and sort of seeing him in action face to face, and I'm saying to myself, there is no way that this guy can be all of this. But then as I paid attention, I realized, you know, here is a cat who he needs people around him because he might be a little unsure of himself in certain aspects, as talented as he is. And he just made bad choices with not only friends, but also with family members, including his brother, who is even a worse person in terms of his social acumen. It's just amazing that here is Mike Vick with all these people around him. And could he have done more to stand up for himself and maybe not be involved with that stuff? Maybe. But okay, you know what? He's done his time. That's not what we're talking about here. What I realized when I saw Mike Vick for who Mike Vick actually was during the bankruptcy trial, when he was paying back people that even the court said he didn't have to pay back because he was being scammed on deals. And for a bankruptcy judge to stand up and say what he said in support of Mike Vick and trying to help him when he has nothing to gain from the situation just sort of tells you that obviously there was more behind the scenes that even a lot of us did not even know. And then the more I learned about Mike from people who knew Mike, people like Jamie Dukes, who said Mike Vick was the kind of guy who couldn't say no. If people would ask him to come to their kid's birthday party, Mike would try to come to their kid's birthday party, even if he didn't know who they were, you know, and just things like that. You know, Mike was always giving away his money. He was always giving away stuff to people, Jamie Dukes, who now announces down in Atlanta, and I think he works with NFL TV now as well, made a comment of how one time that they were out and they went to do some charity somewhere, and there was a kid in a wheelchair, and Mike Vick saw the kid in the wheelchair and signed whatever the kid wanted signed or something like that. And Mike kind of noticed the kid's wheelchair wasn't all that good. So Mike went out left the charity event that early. People said, where is he going? He went out to go find the kid, bought the kid a new wheelchair. And, you know, I hear these stories. I'm going like, this is the same guy who did this. And by the way, this is pre going to jail, pre dogfighting stuff. So once again, he's this he's a sort of myriad character that is just all over the place. And now here he is at this particular point in his career where, despite his talent, I think most might agree that we never got a chance to see the complete Michael Vick in a situation where he had a team around him, where he could do the things that he did, and the team was able to succeed. Yes, I know they went to the Super Bowl. Yes, I get that. But what we're talking about is on a regular basis with what Mike Vick brought to the game and what people who know football saw when they saw Mike Vick play, we never got a chance to see that truly play out. And now at this career, is he just another senior backup quarterback to help mentor somebody else? Well, he doesn't think so. He feels he can be a starter. Now, if he comes to the Jets, can New York handle that sort of noise that would happen if he's there? I think so.
It's not good for Geno Smith.
But it's not good for Geno Smith. I totally agree, because Mike Vick is so popular. Now, if Mike Vick knows that he's coming in to be a mentor in a backup role, if he changes his mind, then it's another story. But if Mike Vick says he wants to be a starter, there is no one on the Jets roster and on the practice squad who could stand up against Mike Vick and say, no, I deserve to be a starter over this guy, even with his diminished skill right now. And it would be a problem.
Not only that, it's a polarizing thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you're doing the same thing you did to your previous starting quarterback.
That's my quarterback.
But on a larger scale, because everybody knew that Tim Tebow wasn't going to beat Mark Sanchez.
Right.
But right. A lot of people think that Mike Vick can beat Geno Smith if that situation ever happens.
I have no doubt that if Mike Vick comes to New York, that he would be the starting quarterback. I just actually sent you a link to Mark Sanchez getting arrested. I think you might like that. And for our listeners who don't know, you'll get the joke in a minute. I have no doubt that if Mike Vick comes to New York, he's not going to be a backup. He will be a starter, as well as Geno played at times last year. I just can't see Mike Vick holding the clipboard with the baseball cap on and the earpiece in, just listening to plays. And you know, the oddest thing of all in this, and I know I've shared this with Matthew before, when you're down in Atlanta, and I don't know, did the link work?
Yeah, it worked.
I freaked out when I saw that and I realized it wasn't my Mark Sanchez. There's some guy got arrested in Florida. It's Mark Sanchez, and I made the mistake of clicking on it, and it's some guy that looks nothing like Mark Sanchez, because he's not my Mark Sanchez. Anyway, I just thought it was kind of funny that they got me. Mark Sanchez arrested in Florida, you know? It's like, what? You know, but... It's just one of those things of, as well as Geno played at times, it would be a very bad situation. It's going to be bad enough when it officially comes down that they're not going to bring back Mark Sanchez and they're going to eat that $8 million. So, oh man, it's a hot mess right now in New York. And then with Adrian Peterson in Minnesota, the running back in Minnesota, coming out and saying, if we had Mike Vick, we're going to the playoffs.
I literally was just looking at that on Pro Football Talk. I was going to bring that up after this.
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, so now you got this conversation from somebody who's completely respected in regard to what he brings to the game every day and how he recovered from that injury like nothing ever happened. And now he comes out and he makes this kind of statement. And once again, as I've said, you add that to the mix of the fact that in Atlanta, there is a firestorm of groundswell of people saying, bring back Michael Vick, bring back Vick, bring back Vick. The fans, you know, I still need to do this for Matthew. You can still buy Mike Vick jerseys if you go into Marshalls and Kohl's and some of the sports stores down there. Despite there was a moratorium at one point. The NFL said, don't sell any more Mike Vick jerseys. So people were going to the secondhand stores and getting them. When you look at the games on the TV, they try to keep certain people out of the view of the camera lens. But you will look up and see number 7 jerseys all over the place. And for a team, now wait, now for a team that I don't know if Atlanta retires numbers. I don't know exactly what's going on because there's a lot of great players that played in Atlanta. And I'm going to say this, and Matthew's probably going to fall off his chair. Deion Sanders was revered in Atlanta, but his number has been worn by at least six or seven people that I can think of since he's left. And they've yet to dole out number seven. They've yet to dole out number seven. So
they do not retire numbers. They do consider certain players' jerseys worthy of being honored.
Okay.
So they do that instead.
It would just be interesting to see, to say the very least, how that might totally play out. No matter where Mike Vick will go, if he thinks he can be a starter, maybe Oakland is a thought, you know. Mike Vick starting, Tim Tebow backup, maybe Cleveland.
We are really intent on getting Tim Tebow signed by the Oakland Raiders.
You know what? I'm going to say this, and I sort of try to put into like a paragraph how I feel about Tim Tebow. I feel like he was wronged. I really do. I feel like the Jets wronged him. I feel like they didn't give him an opportunity to develop the right way. And I'm in the coaching staff, you know, for not putting him in a better position to succeed with his skill set. Now, granted, there's a little inflexibility on Tim's side as well, too. He's insistent upon being a quarterback on one side of his face. The other side, he says he's going to do whatever it takes to win, right? And you know that the way I feel about Tim Tebow started back when he was left off the ballot during his second Heisman Trophy run that caused him having a second Heisman Trophy. And quite frankly, when you look at the scope of his career, he legitimately could have had three because there was no other better player in college football than he was during his time there in Florida. There just was not. So, you know, I feel like so many people have gone against him and have wronged him that he's, you know, much like with Mark Sanchez. You remember how much I did not want Mark Sanchez for the Jets? And then, but you know what? The man took me to two straight AFC championship games. And the one in Pittsburgh, the second half anyway, he was the best player on the field. And everyone, even the people who don't like Mark Sanchez, who do not like Mark Sanchez said the same thing. So I just and Trent Dilfer, someone who it sort of came out a while ago that Tim Tebow had asked Trent to watch him play. And for those of you who might not know who Trent Dilfer is, he is a former quarterback, Super Bowl winning quarterback. But he's not known for his ability. He's more known for his ability. As a player, he's more known for his ability to look at the game, to examine the game. He's very cerebral. He's probably maybe a step below Chris Collinsworth in terms of how he's able to communicate it to people, but he's still very, very good. You know, for those of us who love the cerebral side of the game, Trent Dilfer is a must listen to or a must read. Well, anyway, the story came out that he was coaching Tim Tebow, and I was very lucky to catch an interview when he actually straightened that out. He said, no, I did not coach Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow went to this guy to train him where he did over 10,000 throws and that sort of thing. And for those of you who actually understand how this works, supposedly the by standards to become an expert at something, you need to do it for at least 10,000 hours. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like
the Malcolm Gladwell rule.
Exactly. So now supposedly in the time that Tim Tebow has been working over this last year and a half, he's been putting that kind of time in. And what Trent said was, I saw a guy who at least in a practice situation where he's just throwing was able to make throws that I never saw him make before. Now, he said, I'm not going to say that's going to translate to when he's under pressure and he's got guys like, you know, BJ Raji or whoever bearing down on him. But at least he said, I could see a different quarterback than what I'd seen before. And that says something to me. It shows that this guy went out and did what he needed to do to get it together. Now, you know, me and She Who Is Brilliant had this conversation for no other reason that she actually has always liked Tim Tebow from the start. And maybe not necessarily as a football player, but as a guy, and thought that he should at least get a chance. And she actually was rooting for him when he beat her Steelers, believe it or not, in the playoff game, which is still a weird moment I'll never understand. But she actually made a comment of, like, she actually asked me, which was kind of weird. It was even more weird. Like, what do I think you should do? I said, well, you know what? Go play in the Canadian Football League. Go show that you're willing to do this, that you have the skill set to put this together. Go get it done. Impress some people there. You're going to be watched no matter what you do. Might as well do it on a professional level and show that you can do it on a professional level. And then, like, you know, much like the cats who played in the Canadian Football League and came back to the NFL, he's still young enough we could make that happen. But now he's unwilling to do that. Now, once again, his lack of flexibility, I think, does him more harm than good. But I really, Matthew, you're right. I really would like to see him get the opportunity to be a quarterback on the NFL level, but just for no other matter than just the interest factor. There's hardly anything interesting. So many teams have how many teams have a quarterback where their fans wake up and say, I wish we had a quarterback? Because
20% of the league?
Exactly. That's not my guy. You know, when you talk about transcendent quarterbacks, John Elway type of cats, whether he was winning or losing, it didn't matter. That team knew this is our guy. This is our.
The problem with that is that's been a problem in the NFL since there were six teams. You can't. If you look at this from a macro perspective, there are 32 starting jobs in the NFL every year.
Mm-hmm.
Those are 32 capable people to play the position of quarterback. Not all of them are great. You're not going to get a Peyton Manning on every team just because that's not how it shapes out.
True.
And you have to factor in the fact that every year, one of those quarterbacks is going to lose their job at least. And if you look at the starting quarterback position heading into the 2014-15 season, with the exception of maybe seven teams, it's wide open. You look at Oakland. You look at Cleveland. You look at Miami, maybe, because Tannehill's good, but he's entering his third season. There's a lot of unanswered questions there. You look at the Jets. You look at Buffalo. You look in a lot of places. Jacksonville. Houston. You don't know who's going to be starting on those teams.
Right, and then when you get somebody, will they be the guy? And it's not a lot of those. You're right. Okay, you're absolutely right. It's not a lot of those players out there, but I think that when you look at from the standpoint of, okay, would I call Russell Wilson the guy in Seattle?
Yes.
I guess I could.
Well, look at it like this. He's been in the league two seasons. He became the captain of that team.
That's true.
He took the team to the playoffs in their first season, won the Super Bowl in his second, and is one of the most watched players in the league. He may not be Peyton Manning when it comes to throwing the ball, but he is a dynamic personality that people are talking about every week.
But now question. I want to ask you this. When you look at your team playing Seattle, do you fear him or do you fear the team?
Well, that doesn't matter, though. I fear him because he's a multi-talented player,
that's what I'm getting at.
The thing about it is, the great teams are multi-dimensional and have great quarterbacks. If you're playing the Denver Broncos, you're scared of Peyton Manning, but you're also scared at the fact that he's got Eric Decker, the fact that he has all these weapons, and the fact that they have Von Miller on that defense.
But you bring up another great point. Is Eric Decker without Peyton Manning the player that scares you? You see, and like, here's what I mean about transformative players. You know, when you look back at the first Baltimore Ravens team that won the Super Bowl, no one talks about the quarterback. No one talks about Brad Smith. You know,
it was Trent Dilfer.
Oh, Lord, I'm sorry, Trent Dilfer. I got it backwards. My bad.
Brad Smith was a Baltimore Raven at some point.
Yes, he was. Brad Smith was the quarterback for the Buccaneers, right?
That was Brad Johnson.
That was Brad Johnson. See, everybody's Brad.
Brad Smith was a guy from Ohio State.
Yeah, and I think he was also the guy that was my barber. So, you know, it's like, once again, it's like I'm getting the name wrong because when you look at certain teams, you know that this person is the glue that makes it happen. Okay, and I don't want to mention this name because this actually disproves my argument, even though some people might use it to make their argument. Somebody like Tom Brady. You know, Tom Brady could walk out there with a Pee Wee League team and get you to the second round of the playoffs just because. So he gets removed from the picture with this. You know, other guys, and you're right. And you know what? And actually, I think about it. That's a great example used with Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning does need a certain level of talent around him to be able to do what he's able to do. So he does need the Eric Decker, the Wes Welkers, and those guys that might be above average players on other teams, but when they get with a really good quarterback, they can respond because whatever connection they're able to make and that sort of thing. So I actually see that working. But see, what I'm talking about is a cat with, regardless of what that team's record is, and you know I don't like Dan Marino, but Dan Marino was one of those guys. Regardless of what the Dolphins' records were, you were fearing Dan Marino and what he was able to help his team and make his team be able to do. And that's what I mean when I say when you look on the schedule and you see a team, who's the first person you think about when you see that team? Well, man, that person's going to be trouble. And then when it's the quarterback, you know that other team that has that guy knows we have our guy. Now, with Seattle or even with San Francisco, you know, they have great young players, though San Francisco and Seattle. And I can't, you know, I like seeing those two guys go at each other. And I love seeing those two guys do what
And
they
it's
do.
funny, a couple of years ago when we were doing the show, we talked about the NFC West being the worst division in football.
How quickly does it change in
It
the fickle world?
changed in moments, just these little itty bitty changes that took 5 or so years to culminate, and it just completely inverted the NFL because now the NFC East is, which was on a steady decline anyway, and
Right.
I want to pivot back to Mike Vick in a minute, but I want to stick on this. You look at every NFL team, and as you said, you look at the player that you're scared to face. Kaepernick and Wilson will be those guys. They just need time to develop. This next season will be pivotal in that. And also, it makes it a little easier for you to develop when you have success surrounding you.
True.
You take a look at Eli Manning, it took him forever to develop because there were so many roadblocks in the way. That's why he's not like Peyton. Peyton had it. Eli has it too, but the thing that Peyton got was pieces that he can grow with.
Yeah.
Eli and the Giants, he's been lucky to get lightning in a bottle twice.
Yes.
And those Giant teams were predicated a lot on the fact that their defense can keep it together, their front seven. Their secondary has been made of glass ever since Ernie Accorsi's been in charge. From Jason Sehorn to Prince Amakamora, it's been Mr. Glass at.
Don't you mess with Jason.
I like Jason Sehorn, but the man retired because he didn't have legs anymore.
that's very
The
true.
Giants have the unique talent of drafting players who, if they look at a nail, will implode from the waist down.
Right.
And it's sad, but. When you look at the Giants, you see guys like Jason Pierre-Paul or Eli Manning, guys that can make or break that team. And you look at all these other franchises. The strong franchises are not only the teams with one player to beat, but with more than one. With the New England Patriots, it was Tom Brady, but when they were winning all those Super Bowls, they were also predicated on defense. They had guys like Teddy Bruschi.
Teddy Bruschi, Ty Law, Lord mercy, that you know the defense never got enough credit as far as
Because
I'm concerned.
you talked about Dan Marino. Yeah, you feared Dan Marino, but Dan Marino wasn't carrying a team to the Super Bowl by himself.
That is true. That is true.
John Elway run his two Super Bowls on the back of Terrell Davis and Shannon Sharp.
Yep.
Greatness can only take you so far alone.
And which brings us to another great point that you and I have always said, you're never one player away from a championship. Because if you're one player away from a championship, there's something else drastically wrong that you don't see happening. You know, and Michael Vick right now, to get back to that with Adrian Peterson's statement, his statement is probably more closer to reality than not, saying, okay, we're in the playoffs with Michael Vick. He didn't say we're winning a championship. He says at least we're in the playoffs. But, you know, that does make a statement to how he feels Vick can contribute to that team right now.
And can I say this? Michael Vick has not played a full season in the NFL in over a decade.
Very true.
The man is a talented quarterback when he's healthy. But his problem is he gets flummoxed in the pocket. He relies too much on the fact that he had speed, operative word being had.
Yeah.
And now as he enters into his mid-30s, he has to rely more on his ability to throw. And the irony of ironies is if Michael Vick went from from Philadelphia to Minnesota, kind of like a quarterback you really don't like, that made that sojourn and had to reinvent himself as a player and had two studs at wide receiver to carry him to that next level.
It, you know, okay, I'll ask you, where do you think, if Michael Vick had to sign right now, where do you think he should go and why?
His biggest target should be maybe Cleveland, Houston, or Oakland, places where he could start right away. Because Jacksonville's a no-win situation. Cleveland, right. You know what? It's terrible. It's a dumpster fire, but he'll start every game. He'll sell tickets. He'll be a guy that Cleveland can look at and say, you know what? We signed him. That means we can take Jadeveon Clowney in the draft and build around defense. And in Oakland, now Portland wants to get the Raiders. They're looking to – they started a petition – to lure the Raiders to Portland. I wouldn't have any problem with that. But Oakland likes winning, and Oakland wants a star. They have Darren McFadden, but aside from that, they have no star.
Yeah. Yeah, and the question is, are they going to be able to keep Darren McFadden? You know, it should be interesting. We should see. Good luck to you, Mike Vick, and hopefully you'll end up where you want to end up. And if you end up being a Jet, hey, heck, man, I'll root for you. At this point, I'll take anything. I just would like to see my Jetropolitans have a successful season. And since we won't have Mark Sanchez, I'm going to have a farewell party for him soon. Going to invite everybody over. And we'll see what we're going to do.
What you going to do?
I'm going home. So thank you for listening to the NFL Rant, I've Gotta Say It podcast with Marvin Williams and Matthew Aloysius, Octavius Orenthal, AFC North, Ryan, the third and a half and the fourth.
Go Brian.
And stay tuned as we will give you links to our Twitter page, website, and Matthew's home address for those of you who'd like to go hang out with him. Thank you so much for checking us out.